professional.
Yes.
He knows. Seasoned, as Mariah said. As Mariah loves to say when she wants to ask me something. When she wants me to say something, yes.
Thank you, Sarah.
When she wants me to answer yes, she says, "You're a seasoned professional." I say, "You know what, Mariah? I think I'm getting your... every time I hear you say seasoned professional, comes with a question right afterwards."
You are listening. You've caught the beginning of a conversation with...
Oh, we were recording?
Yeah, why not? Why not? We have...
At the cornerstone.
The long-time homie. A Renaissance man.
Yes.
Someone who... really also just recently unleashed two brand new beautiful projects, gifted these projects to the world, Neckbone and Tubman, a genre bending book of poems, and also a genre bending album, the griot poet, painter, preacher, in a poem at some point, I think I said you were the James Baldwin of house, none other than Avery R. Young is in the corner store of a man. Thank you so much for being in the building.
Would you say I was a James Baldwin of house and the James Brown of poetry?
Yes, sir. That's right. That's right.
I remember those things. Yes.
Yeah, man.
Right. That's funny.
Well, look, before we get any further in, I got you some snacks out the corner store. I was trying to kind of, because I we're around the same age.
Yes.
Starting to get a little more health conscious. So I got you some sparkling water, but it's strawberry bubbly.
I enjoy sparkling water now in my refined.
Yes, in your
seasoned age.
And then also, this is a throwback. Now, there's no peppermint stick, but I did get you some Hottie Bites, hot and spicy pickle snacking cuts.
This is deep.
I really wish I would have come up off a peppermint stick as well.
Look, I need a peppermint stick.
Yeah, no, that's fair to enjoy those.
Handle the peppermint stick.
Okay.
I'll handle the peppermint stick, but yeah.
But welcome, man. This conversation is a long time coming, but congratulations on this summer.
No, thank you. Yeah, I get the summer, you get the fall. That's what I'm hearing in a text I got this morning. I'm with it.
Yeah. No, I know. Rebecca at Volumes is getting us together, hopefully, for something soon in September. Hopefully September 19th, you and I will be together at Volumes Books, in part because you just released this summer this incredible project, Neckbone.
Yes. Neckbone.
Yeah, this is different, man. This is a different kind of book.
Wow.
What can people expect? First of all, people should just, as we're talking, people should go online and order it. You could find it everywhere. Northwestern University Press. Your first collection.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yes.
The first one. But, yeah. I was telling, I was hounding Jamila about her book. And I was like, look, don't let me tell you, it needs to hurry up. Took me all this time to figure it out. But it's definitely the book that I wanted to have out, if that's a way of expressing it. I feel like a lot of times, especially when it comes to the idea of poetry, that most people have associated with some level of academia, literature, that you have to be really, really, really smart to understand it. And I'm like, one, poetry is art. Poetry is always what the people speak to each other. And I've always been around communities where poetry just didn't live in book or on page, that it walks, it talks, and breathes. So I wanted to...
What are some of those communities?
Well, speaking with you, the LTAC.
Yeah. But even prior to that, because, of course, you're from the west side of Chicago.
Yeah, from the west side of Chicago. Growing up in a Baptist church, listening to a preacher cultivate a text that is not necessarily in the tongue or the language of the people and the members of the congregation, then to fuse that language or to take thou shall not and turn it into a language that the people who are listening can understand, is always a way in which poetry has always existed, because you're basically flipping Shakespeare, right? So William becomes Willie in that sense. But
do you see yourself as a kind of translator? Because I feel like, you speak to so many different communities.
I think so. I would say that. I would say translator, although I don't think it's my job to translate. Right. I think once you put it in a form of a book, it becomes translation.
Yeah.
But as the artist, in the act of putting that work down on page, I think I'm more of a presenter, not necessarily a translator. It's not, I'm not invested in a person understanding what somebody else may be saying, right? Which I think is the work of a translator. What I hope to be doing, right, is presenting a way in which people speak in the art that I feel it, in the art that I feel that it is, right? I think it's artful to be a minister and be able to read something and then take it and reiterate it in a form that is way more transcending than it is translation,
yeah,
right? Because
no, right.
It's funny that you use the word translation, because I believe with translation, there is the idea of understanding. Because I'm solely looking at it in the aspect or in the context of understanding something that is said. What I'm trying to do with this work is gather a response, right? And because the way in which poetry was presented to me, and it's, you know, it wasn't nothing you just sit and listen to and go, oh, okay, and snap at it. You respond to it. You say yes. You say amen. You say, all right, that's true. I got you. I feel that, you know?
Yeah.
So that in that church community, this hip hop community, has always been an exchange of energy. And not necessarily this thing that you sit down and kind of read and go, oh, okay, Keats is wonderful.
is that part of the reason why you've not more hesitant to do a book? I mean, because you have a lot of projects out, and right. also a lot of poems in the world prior right. to this book.
Right.
But was that some of the trepidation, the difficulty of taking what you do and kind of putting it into this 2D project?
That was, at the end of the day, it's a different politic, because it is the first book and it is full color. So you have a press that is brave enough to do this for a person with a first volume. So a lot of the reason why Neck Bone is out this time, because Neck Bone went on many desks and they were like, well, we could print the black and white stuff, but we can't print the full color stuff.
Because also your art is also
right,
in
the
book.
Art is in yes, the book, the yeah. visual verses,
right.
stuff like that. And a lot of what Northwestern got when I gave them the thing weren't word files. They they were images, right? And so they were just like, well, how does dude send me a book of poems that are all images? And I'm like, because that's what it is. It's images. And so Parnisha, like I said, is real cool. And she saw what she believed is a new way of presenting poems or looking at poems.
Yeah.
In all of that particular conversation, excuse me, when you think about poetry and the way in which poetry or the poems are presented in this book, and they was able to rock with it. So that's one of the situations. It's what a publishing house is willing to publish, simply because there's a norm, right?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. This book looks nothing like a traditional poetry book, norm. Whatever that means.
Right.
But this absolutely is an art book.
Right.
It's hardcover.
Right.
It's a very beautiful, bronze or gold embossed cover.
So, you know, the copper situation. That shout out to Mary, that hooked all of that up. And again, it's not even to say that I'm the first visual poet. I loved what Douglas Kearney is doing, yeah, and other poets who are experimenting with what words and text look like on page. But this is just something a bit other than just words and text on page. Yeah. This is a lot of the times what poets present to people in the context of what is published is the final thought or the final draft, you know?
Yeah.
And this particular book, Neckbone, is filled with what's going on in my brain before the words even come down on the sheet of paper.
And you, right, you, right, you experience that as a, right, reader, in part because not only is a lot of it in your hand,
right,
but you're also seeing cutouts and scratch outs, and you feel like you are privy to the process.
Right. So, yes, a lot of it is really about process and me being very vulnerable in saying, hey, this doesn't come out perfect.
It feels intimate in that,
right,
way. But
yeah,
but you are someone who as a performer is vulnerable.
Yeah.
You give,
yeah,
so much. If you know, folks listening have not seen Avery or Young perform, do yourself the service, because it is, yeah, one of the greatest entertainers in the history of the city.
Wow.
Has to be. I mean, but could you, in part because you give so much.
Yeah.
When you, I mean, I was lucky to be at your book release, and that was true. But I mean, you catch you on any night,
right?
You know, if it's a California Clipper,
right,
if it's at a school open mic,
right?
You know, you will really bear. So you leave it all out on the stage.
That's all you have. That's all you. That's all you know. That's all I have. I think that's the, for me, that's the task of the moment, right? I said my challenge to myself in all the art I do, whatever the genre or discipline, is that only my hands can do this. And in order for that to really happen, as far as I am concerned, I have to present all of me, all that comes forth in the hand, right? The print is not just a dab and some inking on a sheet of paper. The fingerprint, it tells you of the whole journey, right? You know?
Well, it's interesting you say fingerprint, because, you know, thinking now about Tubman, mm-hmm, the record, and,
yes,
and your music,
yes,
prior, it, there's no mistaking your voice, and there's no mistaking, even if, let's say, you do a cover or sample a bit of another song,
right,
like when you put your fingerprint on, you put your funk, your stank on it.
Yes, indeed. This is what I heard.
The music comes from the church as well.
Yes.
So where, after the church, where are some of the other spaces where you're presented or being presented then other art? Where are some of the other spaces from being a kid, even, that you then, right, see music and or poetry, both, either or, in these other spaces?
One, I don't ever experience. I have never experienced life without music. My first memories for me is music, and not just church music, but I was also in a house where you had what they call them, the backsliders. So there was Millie Jackson and Mahalia Jackson in the house, right?
Wow.
So
yeah,
there was,
wow,
that was that. And then going into school, and I went to Hanson Park, which was a pretty diverse population of students. And so everybody, like my friend Moon, was listening to rock, and Daisha was listening to Prince, and Sam O was listening to what Sam O was listening to. And I just remember, like, and when I was in school, like, hip hop was starting to do its thug dizzle, and I saw, and then I was in school in the time when I kind of saw the shift, right, went from REO Speedwagon to Big Daddy Kane. You know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay. And I was a part of this. It was interesting to watch this, right? So a lot of the spaces just comes the church, the juke joint, the cipher, the house parties, everything. I mean, you're Chicago, you get everything. And yeah. I was explaining this to Ayanna Contreras. It's something about walking down North Avenue where I grew up, and you're walking past there's music that is coming out of the liquor store. There's music that is coming out the Vienna Beefs, a music that's coming out of a church storefront church. There's music that's just coming out of some, and then over the storefront church is the music that's coming out of somebody's apartment, and you just in this tunnel of all of these particular sounds. And so, you know, that is reflective not only in my music, but you hear it in everything that comes out of Chicago, from Chance the Rapper, No Name, a song like Black Exploitation. Come on now. That's walking down the street in Chicago. That's walking down the street in Chicago.
Right.
And it is a wonderful gumboed symphony, if that's a term I will put on the world right now.
Drop it on.
It's a wonderful gumboed symphony that you hear, you know, walking down the street. And that's what I try to do and bring out in Tubman. It was the initial thought was to kind of extend the poems in sound, or with sounds, and as if a lot of things that were still on page wasn't last thing to say about those particular poems or those themes that are brought up in the book.
Well, that's something about your you hear on your music, that gumboed symphony, right? Because you are comfortable in, you know, what sounds like more traditional gospel records.
Right.
But you also will have rock sounding records.
Yeah.
You have a lot of hip hop breaks.
Right.
And more than anything, in some ways, like, you're a son of house.
Yeah. Hey, there's no other way to put it. There's no way other than to put it. It's for me, the art all is bringing about all of you to the table, bringing all of you to the table. I haven't really chosen. Don't necessarily. I'm not conflicted between the sacred and the sin. You know, because sometimes I understand in some cases the sacredness in the sin. Right. You know, and the sin and the sacred, you know. So I'm not conflicted by those things. I'm definitely always teetering on the line where they both exist.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. You are unapologetic in every way, in some ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to be. You know, the work that I'm doing requires to be unapologetic. You got to, you know, car laid, car played. Shout out to Nate Marshall.
Are you still active in the church?
No, I mean, well, I take that back. Yes, I am active in the church because I have a ministry, a traveling ministry, as Mama Charlotte Franklin says. You know, that's his ministry. He has service all the time.
Every performance.
Every performance.
It really does.
So she says, yeah, you're still active in the church. Anybody ask you what church, where's your church on? You tell them the church of Avery R. Young.
Yep.
You know, so I'm active. I'm in that way. I currently hold no membership in a formal church, house, or home, but I definitely, I'm definitely more accepting of the idea that what I'm doing is more of a ministry. Yeah.
So I want to talk about influences. You know, like in and we could talk about the different spheres, and obviously there's great crossover, but. Poetry-wise, you know, who are some of the folks who've had a really big impact on the way you think about your own poetic?
Definitely Langston Hughes, because it was his poem was the first poem I... No, I'm sorry. County Cullen was the first poem that I saw. I was like, oh, if we must die. Oh, okay. But I still don't think he's been as influential as Langston Hughes, because Langston Hughes spoke for those cats in Harlem that, you know, a lot of other folks didn't say, well, no, you shouldn't. That's not the stories you should tell. You should tell those That's stories right. of them upright citizens and, you know, not the whoremongers. No. No. So him in the sense that he was speaking for a people. Toni Morrison, Ashe, who we
yeah.
lost recently
yeah.
because she was a writer that, again, said, I'm not, unlike Langston, which I can see the white gaze on his shoulder. Her work don't, you know. You said it one time about my work. You said, white people don't live here. Right. And that's definitely the influence of Toni Morrison.
Right.
Right. Because, again, I live in spaces where what white people doing really has, like, no concern. Right. A concern. I've come from spaces or a household that, like, what white folk were doing just really wasn't the thing that was moving and driving the home, yes. right? I explained to somebody when I was talking about the book earlier. I learned at an early age through my family, or more so the woman who raised me, my big mama, Mary Booker, that something was bigger than white people, right? Something in her mind, and in the way in which she fashioned her life, God, Jesus, her religion, her yes. faith was bigger than the oppression of white folk. So we didn't necessarily live in a house, right, where that was white focused. You know, it wasn't good times. It wasn't some angry person coming home talking about, dang, we just can't get over because the boss won't let me do it, won't give me a raise, and da 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 da. We grew up in the house. It was like, hey, well, them doctors said you were never gonna walk, but look, you walking. You know, so we lived like that, right?
Right.
So,
and that's a true story, right?
Because you, thoroughly true story.
You were born with.
I was born when I was born. My feet were upside down. So the way in which I was laying in my mother's stomach. My feet were like bound or something, so they weren't able to develop. And so the doctors were like, he's not going to walk. You know, he should cut his foot off. And she was like, and Mary Booker was like, one, he's going to grow. So I'm going to keep, I have to keep buying legs, and legs are expensive. At the time, I mean, still are. It's not like yeah. prosthetics is, that, you know,
then
you go get
down.
Them joints at Walmart, nothing like that. But you, and ultimately, she was like, that wasn't her decision to make. Like, if I grow up, I get tired of them, I can cut them off. But she didn't want to cut them off and have me look at her and say, you the reason why I don't have. Is because you made a decision that wasn't yours to make. And that's what I always say.
Yeah.
She's the smartest person I ever will know.
Now, you said Mary Booker, the woman who raised you.
Yes. Yes, she's my legal guardian.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. So my mother, who has cognitive issues, she had us, but Mary raised us. And
yes.
Mary had raised her since she had been nine.
Wow.
So her mother, my grandmother, had left her in the care of my uncle, who's a prominent character in the book.
Yeah.
And he was young. He didn't want to deal with a 9-year-old. So he brought her to Mary Booker. And Mary Booker was like, okay, that's my niece. I'm going to raise her. And then as she grew, she started to have children. And she had four of us, myself and my three sisters. And Mary Booker raised us. So that's yeah. how it worked.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And where is she?
She's deceased.
Okay.
She deceased over 10 years now.
Okay.
Over 10 years. And Ashley was a little girl when she passed.
Okay.
But yeah. It was all good. It's just her birthday is the same day as Christiana Colon's.
Oh wow.
On April 16th. So yeah, she cool. She's the one that said get a sit down job, and that's exactly what's happening.
So, County, Langston, Toni Morrison.
Oh, Toni Morrison, James Baldwin. I can't even front James on James Baldwin. But then I have to move over to cats like Baba Haki, Mama Angela, a lot of the Chicago writers, Carolyn Rogers.
And you are very clearly an inheritor of the Chicago Black Arts tradition and the Chicago Black Arts poetic.
Right.
I mean, both quite literally because you've been a student of theirs.
Yes.
I mean, and Miss Brooks and, you know, and some of the places I remember seeing you in when we were both younger was at the Gwendolyn Brooks Black Writers Conference and spaces like that.
Yeah.
But also, that, I mean, that you know, you are taking their poetic and also making it your own. And
you have to work. You have to work and understand the tradition. But the thing to understand too is that now that you carry the canon, right? And so the next ones after me are going to now. Like you have no excuse. You got to do something now because Nick Bone out in the world. Nick Bone out of the world. What you gonna do? Now that Nick Bone I'm always saying that Mama Brooks gave black writers in a certain position permission to still be black, right? Because a lot of
and she made that decision, right?
Yeah, she made that decision.
She stopped. Fucking with white institutions.
And
in part because her students, like, you know, Baba Haki and others, were like, "Yo, by the way, you know, it's nation time. Are you with us or nah?
She was like, "I'm with you."
Right.
"I'm with you." And yeah, she had white institutions beforehand, but those white institutions were always clowning her.
Yes, belittled her. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So
a simplistic poetic or whatever the fuck that bullshit they said.
And nowhere near it. If you're reading white folk that were writing when she was writing.
No one make music like her. Music like her.
No.
And no one is also like as clear as she is either. Somebody or as complex. I mean,
oh my goodness. And to call her simplistic is just again just thorough insult.
Yes.
It's not even it's a nice word. But it's a thorough insult, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the same thing. Then there's us, like the cohort, as I call us. You have folks like Roger. You have Reeves and Bonaire God. You have folks like yourself, Big Sister Patricia. You have... folk who I'm looking at and I'm like, okay, this is what we gotta do. We gotta come with it. Tara. It's so many other folks that are that influences and that's poets. But a lot of influences also come from James Brown, Gil Scott Heron.
Well, that's what I was gonna ask about music.
Gordon Parks.
Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah.
A lot of artists that worked in multi, you know, multi disciplines, and so especially when I think about like Gordon Parks, because he directed the movie, and then he would do the soundtrack. that's a step of beyond Spike Lee,
right? Yeah,
Spike Lee not doing soundtrack. His own soundtracks.
Yeah,
And then he would make these pictures. You take these pictures, and he would write. He, along with like Nina Simone, is probably like James Baldwin, and Gordon Parks is probably like the four. My Mount Rushmore, basically.
Mm.
I think Gil Scott is. Gil Scott is peeping over shoulders or whatever. Like everyone, like he does this. You, I'm here. But again, and I say Gil Scott only because he was the first artist I knew as a poet that really did music seriously. Like, and he was doing the music, right?
Yeah,
it wasn't
and a great poet, but a better musician.
Right.
Yeah.
And he understood and he taught me how to, what I keep trying to tell the musicians and that work with me in the Deacon Board in the studio, is that the music is laying foundation for the language. Yeah. Like for Gil Scott-Heron, I felt like the language doesn't get lost in the music. So that's his biggest influence on me as it comes to a poet who also makes music, right? To not lose the language in the music. Because it's easy to do, because music is that much more easier to pay attention to than sometimes language, yeah. Right? And especially language that also request something different from your eyes, right? When you look at it, you're like, what is going on? Because a lot of it is coded, right? Because it's code. Mm. And that's intentional, right? And on paper. But like I said, music is easy to listen to, but I still want you to know this song is about the four girls in the 16th Street Baptist Church. This song is still about Trayvon Martin. This song is still, so you shouldn't lose what a song's about, because you kind of just lost in the music, right? And sometimes that happens when people choose the instrumentation over the actual words. So
you a lot of the folks that you mentioned, they also have had a very serious commitment to community, to communities, yes. to education, both in terms of their role as a presenter in a community, as an educator right. in a community, but also a lot of the folks you mentioned as teachers in a community.
Right.
You're one of the most socially engaged, community-driven, minded, rooted artists that there is.
Yeah.
And still at it, you know, 20 plus years in this work. What keeps you committed?
One is because I believe that I can actually do what it is that I'm doing. I actually think I'm really good at it.
Yeah.
No conceit. And two, I still think there is more to do. If I didn't think it was any more to do, then I'd just be doing something else with life. Because, you know, life ain't meant to do the same thing all the time, you know, forever. But I still think there's something that I can add to the culture and to this. It's evident when I look at the book release party. And Rebirth did the piece about Khalif Browder. I was just, oh, okay. Being around them young folk shows me like what I'm actually pouring into the thing for them to even consider that particular subject matter and present it in the way in which it was presented. You know, I feel a lot of it was had to do with my influence.
You've influenced generations of young writers now at this point.
Right.
Right. And you continue to, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
I just had some, I'm working with little ones now and I'm just looking at them like, okay. And one got the Gwendolyn Brooks, Eleanor Ross got the Gwendolyn Brooks Award. And I was like, all right, here we go. Back one more generation. Here we go. So it's real cool. It's real cool to see that. It's real cool to see that.
So you're clearly a committed person. You're also very committed to Chicago.
Yeah, I love Chicago.
Why? I mean, why? I guess why stay? I mean, I know shit. But you know what I mean? You've been here and been working here and putting on for the city and doing really important work in the city, and have not really gone elsewhere, even though, you know, I've seen you in other cities pop and probably, you know, given it's changed now, but, you know, musically you could have migrated and gone elsewhere, or, you know, but why the continued commitment to the city as well?
Chicago's home, regardless if it remains my permanent residence. You know, 20 years ago, if you asked me where I would be like now, I'm like, oh, in Paris. Because I was always like, at this point in my life, I would be doing the James Baldwin thing. I would be abroad and spending time in Budapest and France and things of that nature, writing and commenting on America from afar. From afar.
From afar, yeah.
Commenting from afar. What has kept me here a lot of times is the commitment to teaching folk. You know, when you make that commitment to educate during a residency, you kind of got to stay put. Although I love traveling. I love traveling. And I would like to do more of it. You know, but
and you do a lot of it also when you collaborate, because you've collaborated with so many different artists and musicians. And, you get to travel with her a lot.
I get to travel with her during the Mandola Awakening. We just came back from Lisbon, Portugal. A lot of the root of me really staying here is has a lot to do with teaching kids, the youth of definitely kept me here. That's mainly been the only reason. There's nothing else binding me to the city outside of just the mere love for it. And
what do you love about it? I mean,
I already know what I'm writing and what I'm making. I can't do it in no other city outside of this one. It's just, this is what I do, is what this city, it's something like the cities for me is something like a cast iron skillet, right? You know, there's something in that skillet that make the food taste the way it do. And you wash it out every time you finish. You wash it every time you finish. But something in it still makes the food taste good, because it's something else that's permanent in that space that kind of now informs the flavor of the food. So it's not to say that I'm way interested and figuring out the ways in which the darker people in a lot of different spaces communicate and code with one another, right? I'm thoroughly interested in that, and I see the future of my work being that. Just because in my experience as a black person in America, I've seen the way in which the code eliminates whiteness, right? Or the fascism, the capitalism. I've seen the way in which that doesn't matter inside the code, right? And I'm interested to see how that works in other in other spaces. If it works like that in other spaces. I'm just, again, like I said, up until now, the work as an educator is what's kept me in the city. But I definitely see myself moving and grooving along. Chicago's always going to be home, though. So it's a cool situation. I mean, look, one more winter, I'm up out this motherfucker, trust and believe. I think I got one more winter in me. I think I got one more January in me. And then I'm gone. And then I'm definitely licking. I'm definitely licking.
So I keep an eye on Florida. You know what I mean? I'm like, look. I know, I feel you.
Eddie, I think I got one more winter in me. And if this one is nice, I may have two. But if this one is anything like this last one, we're going to have a whole different interview next time I'm on the show. Avery, so you said, I've been in San Francisco. I've been in Oakland. I've been somewhere where the temperature is like the same thing all year round. Because this Arctic, that joint right there was murder. That was murder on my soul. It was
perpetually
horrible. I was like, and people were like, and I remember going to South Africa and going to Cape Town. And people were like, why are you there? You come here. I'm like, you know what? You're absolutely right. Well, I don't know why, but I definitely would tell you don't come in December and January. If you come to Chicago, come in June, July. That's what you do. That's what you do for your soul. Because I wouldn't tell anybody to come here in December or January or February or March.
Agreed. My fear with that is then they'll mess around and fall in love with the city, and then they'll move here and then cuss me out come January. You know what I mean? And I've seen that happen a lot.
I've had it happen to me a couple of times, too. I'm like,
Listen.
Hey, it's just a couple of months. You get through
it. Yeah, it's 6 months. Winter 6 months. It's just 6 months.
It's just 6 months. You'll be fine. You'll be fine in July.
Yeah, trust me. August is popping.
It's popping in August. It's popping in August. It's the Silver Room Block Party.
Yo, come on.
You start naming stuff that happens in the summer.
Right.
You know. In the winter, for anybody who comes here and from a different climate, and in the winter when they're going through the misery, you start naming the shit in the summer to look forward to.
Right.
But they don't do like this. Then the taste is, and then the 3rd of July is this, man.
It's all within six weeks. Right. Like our whole shit. We're just like, yo, no. These 6 weeks are special.
Man, there's nothing like Millennium Park, man. I'm trying to tell you, the movies in the park.
Right.
There's so much in Chicago. Chicago's popping in those 6 weeks.
My face is hurting now. You are really one of the hardest working people in this industry. And we're going to do something on September 19th, hopefully at Volumes Bookstore.
Yes.
What do you have coming up that people could also see you do your thing?
That's 19th. I'm over with Ayana over, I think, Promontory Point. But I'm also, what am I doing with my life? And a lot of it is not in the city, too. That's
okay.
I'm doing a Furious Flower, but that's in D.C. I'm trying to think. I got something next week at a boat with the Center for Poetry on the 29th. I'm doing a workshop on the 28th that people could still sign up for. It's with the Illinois Department of Humanities. And I have some stuff coming up in October and trying to start a new season over at the Clipper. But I was thinking, and maybe you think the same thing. You think the Clipper is getting a little too tight, though?
I feel you. Yeah. I love you there because I love that space, and it's a beautiful space.
Right.
But yes, it is changed from what it was.
Right.
I would love to see you do a residency there. I would also love to see you do a residency at the Green Mill. You know,
yeah.
I would also love to see you do a residency at the. I don't know now. I don't know if they would do it, but the Jazz Showcase as well on.
I'm not straight head.
They had. I saw Micaiah do a good set that was. Yeah. Kind of, I mean, he's straight, but he's also way off,
right?
And that's why I thought of it. But I
think I would love to do the Jazz Showcase. I love the folk over there too. But I know how they are about.
Well, I would
preserving the culture.
I love seeing you at the Clippers. So if that's a possibility, and folks could see that in the fall, that would make a very special fall for the people. So maybe bless them one time.
Yeah, I think we gonna do a couple. At
Good.
The Clipper.
Good.
But I do know that the concern at the Clipper is that it's getting a little tight in the Clipper, which, again, I like tight spaces. I'm from the Storefront Church.
And
Lit X. And all those spaces
where
room wasn't necessarily, we didn't have the economy of room, right? I was just telling Cash about the first LTAB over at Chopin Theater. I was like,
in the basement. Yeah.
In the basement. And to see it now it's crazy, but I said it was something in that basement that you never gonna see.
Well, that's really, I talk about this with Idris a lot,
right.
You know, that we, you know, you and I, right. like that general, we really do come from the basement.
Right.
You know, we come from that aesthetic and style.
Yeah.
And it was, if you put on in the basement, you felt like you put on.
Yeah.
You know, and to see how that then translates 20 some odd years later.
Blue Groove Lounge, I feel like everything that was popping was literally in a basement.
That's right.
Of a space.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Anything that was popping.
Yeah.
Was literally in the lower level of a space. And it was, you know, when I first was like out and stuff like that, and out in poetry venues and hip hop venues. I'm like, damn, is every goddamn thing underground? Like they really taking this word underground, literally.
they,
This shit is literal underground.
I get it, y'all.
Do we do anything on the third fucking floor?
No one.
Do we gotta go upstairs? Can we really do something that's like on the third fucking floor? Yeah. But it's something about being down there.
Yeah,
it's something about being down there.
Where can people stay in tune with you on socials and so they know also where to go?
Instagram, Avery_R_Young. I don't have no more room on Facebook, so you can look at the page. You can be a fan or whatever, but you can't be my friend. So you can holler at me, AveryRYoung.com, and get on the mailing list, get on the MailChimp list, and get all of the information concerning me and all of the good stuff in between. Bada bing, bada bang. And my Twitter is BEBLK. That's BBLK at BBLK on Twitter. And it's all good. And Neckbone and Tubman, all the things that are out in the world. Neckbone, Visual Verses is a book, University Press. And there's Tubman, period, with for Practically Everyone Records, which is a local record company here in Chicago. Oak Park.
Well, maybe if you're okay with it, and DJ Cashera will bless us, maybe we'll go out listening to one of the tracks on Tubman. Is that a possibility?
Cool.
Okay, cool.
That's cool. Do we know which one?
We'll do that. We'll do that in post. We'll figure that out. But Avery, for real, man. First of all, anytime you are always a welcome guest here. I hope you already know that, but
cornerstone.
Yeah, please come back.
For sure.
And man,
we got to talk about tuning. I want to be when you talk about. All right, that's a good idea.
We'll do a special 20th anniversary edition of Louder Than a Bomb. But man, I'm so glad that you put these projects into the world this summer, and thank you. Salute you. And it's always good to spend time with you, man. Appreciate you.
Oh, that's my brother, y'all.
Now and then you see me dancing, and know them doctors said I never won. They said, Miss Booker, we think we need to amputate. I said, I'm with mommy and my grandma. Come on over here. Mama call him a heavenly father. Mama call him the king of kings. Mama know he's a bomb in Gilead. That bomb be the prince of peace. Mama know I ain't no burden to bear. And ain't no secret that no one can tell. Mama right back there, oh, like your magic. Mama know I can't be the prayer.
And a glass.
want to thank our super producer, DJ Cashera.
WGN boss man, Todd Manley.
Shout out Ernie the Engineer.
And of course, Max the Snack Tour.
All day. On IG and Twitter, we are
Cornerstore_pod.
Please, y'all, rate and subscribe on iTunes. Tell someone to listen to The Corner Store. And if you wish, you could also tell us who we should have on The Corner Store.
Yeah, just, you know, slide in our DMs.
They're open.
A great way to support us is through our Patreon account. It's patreon.com/cornerstore_pod. And you can, you know, support us in our future endeavors and, you know, get some benefits along the way. And
it's like the little change jar, like,
yeah, you know
in front,
little,
like at the corner
jar,
store.
Right?
Yeah, right. If you listen, please support, and we really appreciate your support.
Thanks.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.